We thought this summer might never come, but it's just about here. Some of us are returning to theaters. There are new TV shows on the horizon. There's new music to listen to. So it's time for one of the things that says summer to us, the summer preview.
This year, we're talking about new movies, new music, and new TV. We'll cover what's coming to entertain you, whether you're out and about or not. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Today, a guide to some of the most exciting TV, movies, and music you can check out this summer. Here with me and Stephen from his home studio bunker is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And also here with us from her home studio is Aisha Harris. Hello, Aisha.
Hello, Linda.
It is always such a pleasure to have all four of us together. We are going to hop right into this summer preview. We are each going to offer up two selections. I am going to start with Glenn. Glenn, what's your first pick? I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to be a shocker.
I don't know about that. My first pick is The Green Knight. Comes out July 30th. It's a film written, edited, produced, and directed by one dude, David Lowery, whose track record is, I don't want to say spotty, but I will say uneven. Ain't Them Bodies Saints, Pete's Dragon, which I did not like, A Ghost Story, The Old Man and the Gun. The trailer looks amazing, though. Just these incredibly composed shots, really wild, vibrant colors and shadows and costumes. It is Arthurian fantasy, which hasn't really fared well in movies in recent decades. It's the tale of King Arthur's nephew, Gawain, who accepts a challenge to fight this Green Knight and must face him every year at the same time. It stars Dev Patel as Gawain, which is great casting. The last time an Arthurian story really did well on the big screen was definitely 40 years ago, 4-0, in John Borman's Excalibur, which is a flawed film, but it is possessed of a vision, a very singular and idiosyncratic and just a little bit bonkers vision. It's messy, but that's because I think, here's my working theory, folklore is messy. And when you try to fit it into a three-act Hollywood movie structure, it just doesn't work. You end up with something like Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, which feels very made by committee. And you need some banana pants in there. And who knows how bonkers banana pants this is going to be, but because it's all coming from one dude, writer, editor, producer, director, I think it's got a really solid shot. It looks great. It's The Green Knight, July 30th.
Well, thank you, Glenn. I have to tell you, every time I hear a color and a rank, I assume that's a Glenn movie. If it was like the Purple Bishop
right.
or the Blue Pawn.
The Dark Knight, The Green Knight, any knight, really.
I would be like, that sounds like a Glenn Weldon movie. Aisha, what is your first pick?
Candyman. Candyman.
What are you doing?
Candyman.
I'm excited
what are you
about this
doing?
One too.
Okay, I'm
How dare
I'm
you?
Done. I'm not going to say it five times, which is
okay.
According to urban legend, is what will summon the Candyman. But that
That's
is what I'm excited
time.
For. Is the
just saying.
All right. Well, I'm not going to say it again.
Cool.
So this movie is a sort of sequel to the original film. And I remember it used to be on TV all the time. So I remember watching it as a kid and being terrified of it. And I think I've seen it maybe once as an adult. And it was years ago. So I don't remember how it holds up. But I think it's really interesting just because the original is coming in the 90s. It is set in the Cabrini Green Projects, a very infamous housing project in Chicago, where mostly Black people lived there, and they were abandoned, they were vulnerable, there was a lot of violence there, and they were infamous for all the crime that happened. And this film uses the titular character to project all of these neuroses and this history of neglect within him. And in this version, it stars Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who you may recognize from Watchmen.
Yeah.
And so he's playing an adult who was, I guess, a kid or a baby when the original movie title came out, and he lives in a new version of it. The Cabrini Green houses in real life have been knocked down since then, and he's living in the gentrified version of it now. And so it deals with sort of the horrors and the ghosts of the demolished Cabrini Green houses. And what I'm excited about is the fact that also the titular character is the actor who played him is returning. That is Tony Todd. He is just perfectly creepy in the first film, and I'm excited to see him return. And Nia DaCosta is the director. She directed Little Woods, which starred Tessa Thompson. It came out a few years ago. It's an indie film, which I highly recommend. So I'm curious to see what she does with this. And she co-wrote the film along with Jordan Peele, who was a producer, and also Wynn Rosenfeld. So I'm excited to see how they bring this very 90s film into the current landscape. And I hope it'll be creepy, and I hope it'll be fun, and I hope it'll also have the same sort of social issues and layers that the original had. So that's Man Candy is coming out August 27th, and that's what I'm excited for.
I'm excited for that one, too. That's one of the ones that got delayed that I wasn't mad that they delayed it instead of sending it straight to home, because I kind of want to enjoy that one with a room full of terrified people. All right, Stephen, what is your first pick?
Well, my first pick, basically all of my picks are about music, because of all the things I'm excited about kind of coming back into the world and coming into summertime, experiencing live music, whether in person or vicariously through film, is kind of what I'm the most jazzed about. And so my first pick is Summer of Soul, subtitled Or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. Now, Summer of Soul, Linda and Aisha, you guys have seen this because it was at kind of virtual Sundance earlier this year. It won the Grand Jury Prize and the Audience Award. It looks to be just an absolute feast of fantastic music. It is a documentary directed by Questlove, compiling footage from the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival. This footage, hours and hours and hours and hours of this footage, sat in a basement untouched for 50 years. Performances by Nina Simone, Sly and the Family Stone, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Stevie Wonder, B.B. King. And apparently this film takes a bunch of this footage and interweaves it with interviews to kind of place this festival in historical context, not only because of all this incredible music, but also kind of touching on the question of how on earth has this footage sat untouched for 50 years? How on earth is this festival not viewed on par with Woodstock as a major cultural event? I cannot wait to revel in that sound world, rediscover all this glorious music. I'm so excited about it. It's coming out July 2nd in theaters and on Hulu, so you can take it in. That's another one I'm going to be trying to see in the theater just because I want to make it feel as much like a live festival experience as humanly possible without the sunburn or the $8 water.
Yeah, that's Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised, coming to Hulu and theaters on July 2nd. Aisha and I can both testify that is a very, very good pick. Absolutely loved it. My first pick is a show that is called Kevin Can Go F Himself, and you can probably conclude what that stands for. It is based, obviously, the pun of the title is off of Kevin Can Wait, which is one of the many schlubby dude, hot wife comedies that have circulated in the last couple of decades. This one stars Annie Murphy from Schitt's Creek. And the show is a hybrid of a multi-camera comedy in which she exists as the hot wife in such a sitcom and a kind of a single camera comedy drama where she basically lives a life of quiet desperation. It is a very interesting idea to me, and I absolutely love Annie Murphy. This idea of exploring kind of what a sitcom wife would actually be experiencing if her life was really like that is something that I think bears a lot of examination. Also, it reminds me a little bit of WandaVision in that it is kind of trying to look at the very construct of the sitcom and what kind of marriage they are talking about building in a show like that. I'm super excited to see it. It's coming to AMC on June 20th. It's going to stream, if you happen to have AMC Plus, which is their streaming service, it'll be a week earlier on June 13th. So that is Kevin Can Go F Himself, starring Annie Murphy. Extremely excited to see it. Glenn, what is your second pick?
I think this one is even more on brand. It's Loki, which is coming June 9th to Disney Plus. Look, it, as we stand now, the MCU televised universe has had one win and one loss. WandaVision embraced the weird and embraced the jokes. It was a win. Falcon and the Winter Soldier went opposite direction, polar opposite. And I was on the fence on that show for a while, but in the last episode, there's a scene where Sam lectures a group of politicians in a scene so badly written and thuddingly executed that it is objectively the worst thing to happen in the MCU, and I saw Mickey Rourke in Iron Man 2, so. So that's a loss. That's a big one. Loki's going to be the tiebreaker, and there's every reason to be hopeful. It's Tom Hiddleston's Loki, who is detained by a mysterious organization known as the TVA, which Marvel nerds will know is the Time Variance Authority, which are basically Marvel's time cops. They monitor and repair the timelines, et cetera, et cetera. The more the show leans into the goofy, the happier I'll be, which is why I am heartened by the presence of one Mr. Owen Wilson as a TVA agent. There's going to be time travel. There's going to be time anomalies. There's going to be alternate timelines. The trailer suggests that at some point Loki assumes the role of D.B. Cooper. So maybe we're getting like a Quantum Leap vibe here, and there'll be a heartwarming life lesson learned every week. But anyway, there's going to be time shenanigans. I'm on board. My hope is that we're going to get some of the chaotic feel from my old favorite Marvel comic, which was called What If, which just mixed and matched the events of characters in the Marvel Universe in really interesting ways. But then I remembered, even if it doesn't do that, there is an animated Marvel What If series coming later this year. So either way, I'm happy. Loki, be weird, be funny, be strange, and I'll be happy. That's Loki, June 9th, Disney Plus.
Outstanding. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Aisha, what is your second pick?
Well, listeners may know that Linda and I were kind of down on Law & Order SVU spinoff, Law & Order Organized Crime, in part because of the way in which it portrayed Stabler's character and attempted to address the issues we've had around policing in film and TV without really addressing it. So it might come as a surprise that my pick is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is coming out this final season, season 8, on August 12th. But this has been a favorite show of mine since it premiered, even though I've also struggled with my own feelings in real life about police. I just think this ensemble is great. And so I'm curious to see how they deal with this. They've been explicit about telling people that they are going to figure out a way to make the show and address the conversations we're having, especially in the wake of George Floyd last year. Terry Crews and Dan Gore, one of the co-creators, they've spoken about how the first four episodes of the new season had already been written, and then once George Floyd happened, they scrapped them. And so there is going to be a conscious attempt to do something with this, and I'm curious to see how that happens. It won't be the first time that they've addressed these things. There's a season four episode where they delved into an issue with Terry being almost arrested because of racial profiling. So that's partly why I feel a little less concerned, because I think that they've already been thinking about these things for a while. So we shall see. I hope it'll be a good send-off. And I'm cautiously optimistic about Brooklyn Nine-Nine Season 8, which you'll be able to watch on NBC starting on August 12th.
Yeah, you know, I think the other thing that I note about this is they may have just concluded that it was a good time to wrap it up, because it may just be not a great time to do an affable police comedy, which I think is a perfectly valid way to think about it, even though the show has obviously, you know, had a good run. I'm excited about that, too. So my second pick is called Physical. It is a series starring Rose Byrne. It's coming to Apple TV Plus on June 18th. It is about a woman who is an unhappy housewife. I did not mean to pick two unhappy housewife shows, but here we are. She is essentially, it is set in the early 1980s is when it begins, and she becomes wrapped up in the world of aerobics and becomes a kind of an aerobics influencer, what we would now call an influencer. But it is very interested, as I understand it, in the connection between kind of the physical body of this woman and her physical strength and food and those kinds of things, combined with sort of how she's feeling emotionally. I think they plan to take some, based on what I've seen of it, some pretty nice and interesting swings in the direction of talking about women's bodies and how the aerobics craze affected and intersected with those, the Jane Fonda business and all that stuff. So I'm very curious about it. And also, I love Rose Byrne. And I think when you tell me, you know, parts of it will be darkly funny, parts of it will be dramatic, I'm, you know, Rose Byrne is exactly who I want to watch in the middle of a show like that. So it's called Physical. It's coming to Apple TV Plus on June 18th. Stephen, why don't you bring us home with your second pick?
God, you know, 8 picks in all, and none of us picked the Boss Baby sequel. I don't even know you people anymore. So traditionally, every summer for the last few years, NPR Music has put together these wonderful playlists of what we call Rosé Wave, which is kind of music that you get together and listen to while you gather with your basic friends and drink rosé. So this is a pretty broadly defined genre. One of the queens of Rosé Wave is Kacey Musgraves. And Kacey Musgraves, a few years ago, put out an album called Golden Hour, which was a perfect slice of Rosé Wave. It won Album of the Year at the Grammys. She has put out 3 records. All of them are phenomenal. All of them were in my year-end top 10. I just absolutely love her. She has a new album coming out later this summer. It does not have a release date yet. They are saying late summer or early fall, but what that means is that singles are going to start slipping out during the summertime. I am so, so excited about it. She has not failed me yet. This particular record seems to be taking kind of another hairpin turn for her. She got divorced kind of suddenly, then spent a year in isolation, wasn't expecting to be putting out a record right now. This is a record that is supposed to be informed by the experience of a divorce. So it is a breakup album. The influences that she describes for it are Bill Withers, Daft Punk, Sade, The Eagles, and Weezer.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's her way of saying it's Rosé Wave. But I'm picking up whatever she puts down, and I'm very hopeful. It is as yet untitled, but it is coming out this summer. New album by Kacey Musgraves.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, as you can imagine, we are eager to know what you are looking forward to watching or listening to this summer. You can find us at Facebook.com/PCHH, or you can tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it is going to be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Blue Air, award-winning air purifiers designed in Sweden. With people spending more time in their homes, their Blue Pure auto models are both practical and stylish, automatically adjusting speed to keep pollution levels in check, as well as offering multiple Swedish-inspired fabric options to match your space. In addition, their high performance is combined with whisper-silent operation that uses less energy than a light bulb. Learn more at blueair.com.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Culturelle, who want you to know that an estimated 45 million Americans may have IBS, according to the International Foundation for Gastrointestinal Disorders. Culturelle IBS Complete Support is a medical food for the dietary management of IBS. It's designed to relieve symptoms like abdominal pain, bloating, diarrhea, and constipation in a safe, well-tolerated once-daily dose. Save 20% on Culturelle IBS Complete Support with promo code RADIO on Culturelle.com.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, sir?
What's making me happy this week is the new announcement that coming August 17th of this year, the Criterion Collection will release on Blu-ray and DVD. Linda, Aisha, do you know what's coming? Do you know what I'm talking about here?
I think so.
The D.A. Pennybaker documentary original cast album, colon,
yes, yes,
Company.
Oh, I'm so glad you said this.
Oh, my God. It's a film that has been impossible to find for years. And when you did find it, the quality was very crappy. It was like a VHS off of VHS off of VHS. Kids, ask your parents. It is a chronicling of the marathon recording session of the 1970 cast album for Stephen Sondheim's musical Company, in which a younger Sondheim, in the single longest act of sustained passive aggression ever recorded on film, drives his hapless, hardworking cast through hours and hours of taping and retaping the songs of that musical. It has been fully restored. It has a new audio commentary by Sondheim, which is intriguing. Yup. It's got old commentary from Pennybaker and Elaine Stritch and Harold Prince. New conversations among Sondheim, orchestrator Jonathan Tunick, and Frank Rich, a new interview with Tunick on the act of orchestrating, an essay by Mark Harris, and Because the Universe is Sometimes Generous, the co-op episode of Documentary Now, and a cast reunion of that episode conducted in 2020. I have already pre-ordered it. I will take half a dozen. That is original cast album colon company coming to the Criterion Collection on August 17th.
Yes.
You have brought such joy to me, Glenn. I had no idea.
Yeah, right.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Aisha Harris, what is making you happy this week?
Well, because of my schedule and because we watch so many things ahead of time, there are very few things that I actually just keep up with while everyone else is watching them. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I have made appointment television viewing every week these last few weeks has been Legendary on HBO, which is a reality competition show, dance show. It is taking the world of ballroom, the glorious queer, mostly black and brown queer culture and movement, and bringing it to a HBO sort of homogenized, but in a way, I realize it's very watered down, but and clearly made for both people who are of the community and also people like myself who are new to this world. But I love it because it is so fun. They're bringing a lot of the elements of ballroom into the dance floor. You have people like Megan Thee Stallion and Jamila Jamil, sort of the outsider, but who have like some sort of cultural cachet folks on the judging board. But you also have people like Law Roach, who is a stylist, and Leomi, who is a house legend, who are also lending their judging talents to the show. And I love it so much. And I recommend everyone just check it out if you love dance or if you love costumes and love seeing theatrical things. It's really, really fun. And I'm glad they were able to keep doing it even post COVID. It kind of sucks because they no longer have like a full audience. So you kind of miss that element of people cheering them on, but in part because you don't have an audience, you can hear the judges when they're really excited about things even louder, where they're just like, yeah, go girl. Yeah, get it. And I should note that one of our friends of the show, Cindy Ballou, who we had on earlier this week to discuss the series Pose, is a co-executive producer. Everyone check it out. Legendary on HBO Max.
All right. Thank you very much, Aisha Harris. Steve and Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
So what is making me happy kind of first blew onto the scene a few weeks ago, going viral, but the story has continued to develop in wonderful ways. Video surfaced from about a month ago of four girls ages 10 to 16 performing in the LA Public Library. They are a punk band called the Linda Lindas, which there's one check in their favor right there. They performed a song called Racist Sexist Boy, which builds to this wonderful bit in which they scream the words poser, blockhead, riffraff, jerkface.
Poser! Blockhead! Riffraff! Jerkface!
And it is a wonderful bit of punk rock catharsis. It was flying around on Twitter for a while. News broke more recently that they have signed to the legendary punk label Epitaph Records. So they're going to be putting out albums before you know it. They have been embraced and celebrated by artists like Karen O of the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Kathleen Hanna from Bikini Kill. They actually perform, if you watch their full concert at the library, beyond just that 1 2-minute song, you can watch them perform a Bikini Kill's song Rebel Girl, which is a favorite in this house, Big Mouth by the Muffs. Wonderful influences, incredible energy. It gives me great hope and joy for the future. That's the Linda Lindas.
Yeah, I gotta say, those girls going viral was very confusing for me on Twitter. I kept seeing Linda and saying, what? All right, thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Really, what made me happy most recently was being able to take my friend Glenn Weldon's advice and finally enjoy Eurovision in its full beauty. But since that's been so fully dissected, I'm going to go with something far more serious, but also wonderful, which is the Netflix series High on the Hog, which is hosted by the food writer Stephen Satterfield. It is based on a book by the food scholar Jessica B. Harris. The book is called High on the Hog, A Culinary Journey from Africa to America, which gives you a better idea of what the series is about. It's essentially, if you like those sort of wonderful food travel shows where people go around and talk about different kinds of food and different influences on food, and also you get to look at a lot of people eating and making food, it is a luscious, fantastic show that I am slowly working my way through because it is so kind of energizing and calming at the same time in a weird way. It's just a lovely, if you liked kind of salt, fat, acid, heat, and things like that. It's just a really wonderful series. I highly recommend it. Obviously, I am a great believer in the ability of food to be a way to think about and talk about history. It's gotten pretty much completely rapturous reviews, and greatly, greatly recommend the series High on the Hog, now available on Netflix. And that is what is making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations that are exclusive to our newsletter, you can subscribe to that over at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can follow Aisha at Crafting My Style. You can follow our editor, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer, Candace Lim, at The Candace Lim. You can follow our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks also to producer Will Jarvis, and thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all next week.
What happens to police officers who get caught stealing, lying, or tampering with evidence? Each week, we open up an internal affairs investigation that used to be secret to find out how well the police themselves. Listen to On Our Watch, a podcast from NPR and KQED.